The Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Hello. Oh, it's you. Just one sec.
I am going to take this call. When I continue, I hope that there will appear on stage this magical thing that in the theater we call committing to the moment. Okay, I'm afraid to say this, but let's pick it up where we left off.
Come on, baby, don't go. Please. What do you say?
I've got no reason to stay.
Stop! Stop it! You must stop! You are bad actors! This is a terrible play! I'll see you in the morning.
Welcome.
Well, we're off and running with Season 5, and we hope we don't trip over our untied shoelaces. Hello and welcome back, dear listeners, to our fifth season premiere, with our episode entitled That Submission Episode, Camp Blood 3 in 2D. We are cuddly and lovable hosts, Tim and Chris. Happy New Year, everyone. And before I forget, happy podcast-iversary, Chris. It was 5 years ago, on January 11th, we came together to create and form THSP. Now, it's been a little while since our last recording of our Christmas episode. How are you, Chris? What have you been up to?
I've been doing pretty well, and I was actually just going to say, that's interesting that it was, like you said, 5 years ago, right?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It was one of those... It was one of those Facebook reminders, like, hey, guess what? On the 11th of January, you decided to make a podcast.
So, once again, we have made it this far to the fifth year. I don't know. I don't know how we did it. But
and 7 years of podcasting overall together.
Yeah. Well, yes. You're right. It was because originally there was that super evil robot vampire podcast. Vampire robot podcast. Yeah, Severpod. God, it was such a long title. Jesus.
Yes. And you forgot it.
I did.
Just
but that
Severpod.
But that show does, you know, that show was sort of like the, I guess you can say, the experimental launch pad that helped us out too. And, you know, and that was when it was you, me, Mark, Dave, Ken Zuckerman, you know, so it was, you know, but it was. Yeah, it
basically the founding members of the Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Right, right. And it was a very good training ground at that time, because now when I go back and listen to those episodes, but it's interesting. Do you ever go back and listen and you hear yourself, you know, at that time, and you say to yourself, God, what could I have done then that I could have done better to make it sound better now? Although, to be perfectly honest, whenever I go back and listen to myself now, I still just go, oh, come on, man, you know, but that is the trial and error process of doing
right.
A show. So
it truly is. But it's been a fun ride so far, and so happy anniversary. So Chris, what have you been up to for your holidays, Christmas and New Year's?
Well,
read any good books, see any new movies, concerts, etc.?
Well, not really, but I did spend Christmas with, you know, my mom, so basically family, basically. And it was and I got to have some time off, too, a little bit from work, so it was fine. I didn't get to do much because, you know, there really isn't, in a way, there really doesn't feel like there's much to do out here, so that my life hasn't really been exciting as of last year. I'm hoping it's going to be exciting this year, but then again, you know, probably not as much. But, no, my Christmas, my New Year's, it was fine. I mean, I like I said, had a day or so off work, which was great, because I very rarely had that when I was originally doing two other jobs that were different. So,
Jamaican you.
Yeah, I know. I can't help it. I'm just a constant worker. I mean, you know, what was the line in the, was it in The Shining, I think? It was all work and no play.
Make Jack a dull boy.
Jack a dull boy, yeah. It's kind of like that. So, but I'm sure you, Tim, have done exciting things over Christmas and New Year's. So.
December was a very exhausting month.
Isn't it? It's always an exhausing month.
It truly is. As I was saying on the our last recording, our last episode of our Christmas episode, the family and I made a trip back to Illinois for Christmas parties and to celebrate some birthdays. So, I mean, we were out in Illinois for about 4 days, and I think it felt like we had like six family parties. I got to see Mark and Kara and the girls for a hot minute, and it was a lot of fun, but way too quick. My sister and her husband and the kids, and it was a lot of fun, a lot of running around, a lot of Christmas presents. We had to try to like cram in a back in the trunk of our car to get home. So the kids had a ball, we had a ball. Oh, and I actually was able to get into Studio 300 for a hot minute, our old stomping grounds. Katie and I actually recorded an episode of Men of Letters and a new Speakeasy commercial for that. And it was intentionally supposed to be released for Christmas, but, life gets in the way and we had some audio issues. So hopefully that episode we recorded right before Christmas will be released before Valentine's Day.
Yeah, hopefully. We didn't get to hear it.
Yeah.
It's a late Christmas present, but yeah. I'm sure it was fun.
Yeah. It was super fun. I'm like, and as soon as I got there, I was like, man, this would be so much fun if we just had a couple more days here and we could also record THSP. I'm like, oh, that was great. But, I actually got to borrow Mark's copy of Used Cars. I watched that twice already. And then we took the kids skiing for the first time, which was very cool. And we saw a few movies. We took the kids to see Bumblebee and Aquaman and the new Spider-Man movie, Into the Spider-Verse. Those movies were very good. Aquaman was okay. But I really enjoyed Bumblebee and Spider-Man, so it was good. I mean, like I said, an exhausting December, actually an exhausting November and December, and now it's hopefully kind of slowed down a little bit, so we'll see for January. Since we're at the 13th, so it's the middle, almost the middle of the month, so yeah.
It's interesting now, on our last podcast, we had to endure a very terrible movie called Red Christmas, and we did a... We did our What Have We Watched segment, right? And we have both somehow managed, in a way, to do a Kurt Russell double feature of Used Cars and The Christmas Chronicles.
Which, I will say, a lot of things in this podcast are planned. That was completely unplanned.
It was not. It was not planned at all. It was like who would have thought it, right? So, yeah. But basically, before the midway through the show, or I think before we started talking about Red Christmas, which, God, that movie still gives me like a bad taste in my mouth. I'm sorry.
PTSD?
Post-traumatic distress disorder. I mean, I don't know how we managed to sit through that movie and talk about it, but we did it. So, but anyways, we had mentioned that, because I had told you Used Cars was pretty good, and you told me Christmas Chronicles was pretty good. So the idea was that why don't you check out Used Cars, and I'll check out Christmas Chronicles. So
yeah.
I checked it out, and you obviously mentioned you watched Used Cars. So
yes.
So what did you think about Used Cars? Did you really like it, or did you – you said you watched it twice. So I mean
Yes. Before we go any further, officially calling this our first ever What Have We Watched Swap segment.
Yeah, it's a first, folks.
But before that, let's pause for our first Speakeasy commercial break, and we'll be back after this with our thoughts on The Christmas Chronicles and Used Cars.
All right, we have Murder, She Hoed, Not 60 Minutes, a Porn Parody. Ooh, and little video game action, too, with some Granny Turismo. Well, here you are, ma'am. We'll see you back here in a week.
You here to seduce me? Oh, no, please. Seduce away. It's been so long. Though I rather think it's all for naught.
Hey, Mark. Did you finish checking the video store for any customers? I don't want another repeat of last week, you know. The last thing that's this video store that we're keeping open so that we can dig ourselves out of massive debt that you were told about in the past by my future self is to have Hobo Mike or Small Talker or Tom or either of the two ghosts of people that died decades ago or any of the other crazy characters that we seem to interact with on a monthly basis given free rein in here overnight.
Yep. That's what we're all about.
Whatever. Did you finish your store walk or not?
Well, I'm back in the front of the store, aren't I? Jesus.
You know, I'm impressed with you, buddy. You know, I think you're finally taking this all seriously.
You know what? Funny thing. I actually forgot my jacket in the store or something. I don't know. I mean, you don't have to wait for me. I got to go back in, though, okay?
But aren't you where...
All right, everybody. Ken is gone. Party!
Yay!
I'm super hard!
The Mark and Ken Video Store Podcast. Scripted for your pleasure.
Okay, Chris, so what were your thoughts on the Christmas Chronicles, my friend?
I enjoyed it. You know, I mean, it is a pretty good, you know, for a movie aimed towards family audiences. I thought it was very good, and I like Kurt Russell playing Santa Claus in it, too. I mean, you know, I think I mentioned it before, and if I... But I always feel when Kurt Russell plays a role, he really puts everything into it. And this is one of those, you know, roles that, you know, he puts everything into it in terms yeah, in terms of the delivery and his performance. And I, you know, it was a very, very interesting movie. I liked it. It was fun. It you know, and it had the Christmas spirit that we all, you know, want to get from a movie like that too, you know?
Oh yeah.
And I did like, I liked the two main characters. They were pretty good. And I just, you know, I mean, like, I really can't give like a big in-depth review of it. It's just that, except that, like, all I can say about it is that it is worth checking out. I mean, and even though now it's January, it doesn't matter. Just watch it anyway. Yeah. I think it really is one of those like movies that should get some little attention for being a, you know, I would say starts out as a minor Christmas classic, and then hopefully it sort of builds itself up as being a you know, a Christmas classic up with the other ones too. So
I'm sure within the next few years it'll rank right up there with, you know, like this, like Tim Allen's original Santa Claus, yeah. And you know, A Christmas Story, and just one of those like like you said, a family feel good, you know, Christmas movie that you watch, you know, once or twice a year, you know.
Yeah, and I love some of the silly jokes where, like, you know, he Kurt Russell, they say to him, "Why aren't you saying ho ho ho?" And he goes, "No, I never say that. That's a myth.
Yeah.
That is a myth. Yeah. Fake news." You know.
Yes. It's like, does my ass really look that, or my butt look that big?
I know. Yeah. Everybody looks at him and they keep commenting how he's not that overweight or whatever, and he has to keep reminding people. You know, it's like that's not. That's just made up. That's not who I really am. Or,
right.
You know, but I did see, like, those little moments are fun too, you know, or like where he's trying to get people to let him use a car, you know.
Right, that was my favorite part.
Yeah,
like, one of my favorite parts where, yeah, he's walking through the restaurant. He's talking like Mandarin. He's talking Chinese. He's talking German. He's talking all these different languages. All these people at this restaurant, and everybody thinks he's crazy.
Yeah, and you think that, you know, and that's what's funny about it. Like, the only person that seems to have a feeling in that restaurant that he might be who he says he is. The hostess,
right?
Because he was talking to her and telling her how, you know, he knew everything that she was. And I love the bit too where he tries to take the guy's car. It was, what was it? Was it a Ferrari or was it a? It was a real expensive car, basically.
The fry cook or the bartender that stole the car.
Well, no, not him yet. Well, but it's the guy sitting at the table with his wife, and he tries to give him like a very valuable baseball card.
Yeah, a Mickey Mantle rookie baseball card, which is extremely rare and worth probably, I think, when I did a little bit of research, I think it was at one point worth between $5 and $25 million.
Yeah, and the dumb wife takes it and tears it up.
For that, you could have bought four cars or five cars.
I know, but I love how the guy is all of a sudden like, "Oh yeah, here's the keys," and the wife's like, "No, I am not giving you." And he's telling her, "Do you even realize this
baseball card?"
I know, and he goes, "Do you realize this is priceless?" And she just tears it up.
Yes. Oh my god!
And then you got the scene in the jail cell where he's, you know, he's held up, and you know, everybody is kind of down, and he and Kurt's character, you know, Santa Claus is able to like pull out the musical instruments and have everybody play. And then afterwards he says, "Hey," when he finally leaves, he goes, "Try to be good." And everybody's like, "Well, yeah, we'll see. And I love what the one guy goes. He goes, "Hey, can we keep the instruments? Is this for us?"
Yeah, but there's that one character, the cop, goes, "See, I'm not crazy."
Yeah, because he saw the reindeer fly.
Yeah.
And then when the one cop that doubts the whole thing comes in and sees him playing, that's when he says, "And they just flew away. That's what he just kept saying all the time, is he just flew away.
Yeah, so, it was, I really thoroughly enjoyed it. My kids, I've seen it probably two or three times last month, and then my kids have watched it about 10 or 12 times. I'm like,
yeah, so it's a very endearing movie, you know? I mean, it really.
Yeah, I mean, but it was like that way last year when they watched Home Alone for the first time. So basically, you know, once a kid finds something that they really like, they're going to, like, just pound the living shit of it into the ground.
Hey, when I was a kid, I loved Airplane. I still love it, but you know, I remember watching that movie quite a bit as a kid. So.
Yeah, I'm thoroughly glad that you enjoyed Christmas Chronicles. It's and Netflix has really stepped up their game with their original content. And I just recently watched Bird Box with Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, what is that about? You know, because it's like I'm online. I see all these memes involving Bird Box, and I'm sitting and I'll be honest, folks. I'm not always in the know on those things because I'm always doing something else, so I don't have that much time to pay attention to
Grandpa Koenig.
Yeah, Grandpa Koenig. Yeah, I can't help it, folks. I have to make a living. You know, it's so when I see these things pop up, I'm sitting here going, what is this thing with Bird Box and Sandra Bullock? And what's with the jokes? And why is there this weird news story about a kid that tried doing Bird Box and with his car and he, you know, or whatever, and you know, gets into an accident? I'm like, what's going on?
I was reading the same articles and stuff like that. I was like seeing, and some of the memes are funny. And then obviously the memes, there's just so many of them that they just become old news, you know, or, you know, it's like, okay, we've officially killed the joke.
I know. Like, it didn't need to go that far. I mean, but what is that about? You know, I mean,
I don't know.
The whole thing, but I'm just saying, like, what is it generally about? I mean,
I don't know. I don't understand the Bird Box challenge. I'm like, do these people not understand that it's a fucking movie? You can't blindfold yourself and then drive down the street. Even in the movie, there's a scene, and I'm not ruining anything about it, because basically what it happens is have you heard of A Quiet Place, Chris?
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Okay. So basically, it's almost like that same movie. I mean, I know the Bird Box is based off of a book, and I don't know if Quiet Place was based off of a book. I'm assuming it was, but anyway. Basically, it's these monsters that come over and they affect your vision, and they make you see like your worst, your nightmares or whatever it is, and you end up the person ends up either going crazy or committing suicide right away. Mm. So they wear blindfolds when they go outside to try to get around places. This guy, you know, they had to drive to the grocery store to pick up food and supplies. So what they did is they blacked out all the windows and they used GPS as their guide. And, you know, obviously these guys running over curbs and he's running over dead bodies, you know, and they keep going, oh, that's just a bump. That's just a bump. And they're actually really, you know, running over people's bodies. But, I mean, even then, you shouldn't be doing this stuff in real life.
I know. Yeah. I mean, just because.
Does there need to be a disclaimer on the fucking movies just so people don't be stupid?
I think they just love doing the odd challenge behind it. And it's like, no, there really is no challenge behind it because it's just – it's not real. It's a fucking movie. Come on. Come on, everybody. Give me a break. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, was that story real? I mean, because I was kind of skimming through that and I'm like, this doesn't sound real. It doesn't seem like it's real, but I don't know. I have not checked that out, that movie yet. I mean, is it okay? Is it like worth
it's good. It's good. It's okay. Good. I like that. Yeah, like I said, Netflix is really stepping up their game with their original films and you know, television shows. It was good. I mean, it's definitely worth a viewing when you get a chance.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. Maybe I'll wait until the hype dies down, then I can like watch it, and then I go, now I get it. Now I'll go ahead and do it, and then people tell me, well, you're too far behind. I'm like, well, whatever.
Yeah, they're on to the next big thing, and Chris is like, wait, I'm still trying to watch Asher's Evil Dead.
Come on, God. Yeah, I know, and I'm certain everybody's blaming me for its cancellation. If they just got one more person to watch that show, you know, they would have been on for another season. But come on, folks. I mean, I'm like trying to like swim my way through like Better Call Saul and The Walking Dead, and you know, I mean, all that shit. So, Christmas Chronicles, like I said, very enjoyable. Thumbs up, definitely. Now, you told me you saw Used Cars twice, so I'm assuming you enjoyed it.
I absolutely loved Used Cars. Everything about it. I love the dog. I love, you know, what was it? Frank. I forget that plays Jim the mechanic.
Oh yeah, Frank McRae. Yeah.
I think he may have been one of my favorite, you know, like little bit players. I thought he was super funny, especially when they try to get him to sell cars. And he's just he get so frustrated at this, like, potential client who's just – or not client, but I guess a client or, potential making a sale on this guy. And the guy only wants to browse. Like, just – he grabs him by the scruff and then goes, just get in the motherfucking car. Sit down.
Well, I love when Kurt, when he goes out there to like, sell the cars when they get all these people, he sees a couple that has an Irish name, and then all of a sudden he starts breaking into like an Irish accent, and yes. like and actually uses an Irish last name, and then he runs into a black family, and then, of course he starts kind of doing the whole
the jive
thing, yeah, and then he runs into
what it is,
yeah, and then he runs into Mexican. It's like he's just working it in this scene, yeah. And then the scene I love in this, I mentioned I think in the previous podcast, is that. There's a scene in this movie where the Garrett Graham character, and he has a pet dog with him, which is named Toby, and yeah. he uses the dog to play dead so he can make it look like this person ran over the dog so he can guilt trip him to buy the car. And the dog is literally like passed out.
Right. And it's like, all I want to do is sell you this car, and all Toby wanted to do was really enjoy this car for your family. And it's just like, I was giving them, like, the really big, guilt trip.
I know, and I love it, too. He's doing the fake crying. And if you look very carefully, he looks away. When he's looking away, he opens his one eye up to make sure that the guy is, like just feeling really bad for himself.
Right.
Over the whole thing. And then he keeps going, and then the guy says, I'll buy your car. And I love it. It's like as soon as they buy the car, he slaps that sticker on for the Kurt Russell character for running for Senate. And, and once it hits that bump, the bumper falls out.
And the kids fall
out. And the kids fall out of the station. It was an old station wagon. But that was back in the day when, I remember as a kid in the early 90s where we had a neighbor that had a station wagon type car, and we used to jump around in the back of it when it was driving. So yeah. Door was closed, obviously, but that was back in the day when you can do that.
Well, even getting back to the point where he the beginning where you see him and he puts a piece of bubble gum on a $10 bill, and then he casts the line.
It's like a cartoon.
Yeah, like a cartoon. Like, what is going on here? And then all of a sudden, the guy turns out to be Polish. He goes, "Oh, really? I'm Rudy."
Kowalski.
Polanski,
or something like that. He goes, "Oh, Kowalski, Polish. Yeah, my name is Rudy." And he does that.
And then he makes the sale finally.
Yeah.
And then he slaps a bumper sticker, with his name out running for Senate. The guy pulls off the lot. The bumper falls off because it's held on with like a piece of chewing gum.
Yeah, and he goes, and "Dan,
like,
that was
God a damn it." We're in about a perfectly good bumper sticker.
and if you noticed, he not only sold the guy the car, but he got his shoes, too. Because he liked the guy's shoes. And Kurt was like, oh, those are a nice pair of shoes you got there. No, my other part I love, too, is where Kurt is trying to get this couple late at night to pick up this car. And, and the buyer is trying to knock down $50 off of the thing. And
$50 ain't no killed nobody.
Yeah. And he goes, okay. And Kurt goes, all right, I'm going to take this to my boss, see what he says. But when he sees these figures, he's going to have a heart attack. And he walks out, and the guy goes,
stroke.
Oh, no, he's going to have a stroke or whatever. And he goes, and as soon as Kurt walks out, the guy says, who is he trying to kill? $50 never killed anybody. And then all of a sudden, Kurt's boss comes in and he's having the stroke. And if you noticed, when he's having the stroke and he falls on the guy, the guy goes, oh my God, I'm sorry. You guys have a hard bargain. Here, take the money. And while the guy's dying, the guy just takes the $50.
This movie was a lot of fun. I mean, and basically, they also had. I was really surprised. Actually, Lenny and Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley and the Happy. It was a Happy Days too. I think made an appearance, a couple appearances as the cameramen that and the production crew that break in for the commercials.
Yeah, that's right.
I would consider it a gorilla commercial.
Yeah, because they're shooting these commercials illegally. And I love that one that they shot in the at the football stadium. with a girl, and I love the reactions that we get when the people are watching it, because there's the scene where Kurt's like, let's take a look under that hood, and her dress is caught on the hood, and he pops it open and it pulls her top off, and she's yeah. and her breasts are exposed, and they're wearing those fake googly eye things. So when, yes. when it comes up, Kurt just takes the eyes and pulls them out and goes, "Wow!" And it cuts to the family. This family watching the TV, and the little kid points at the TV directly, and he goes, "Look, bear tits."
Yes, I nearly fell on my chair when that happened.
That's great.
What did
he
say?
Yeah, no. The old
people. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, because Garrett Graham's character thinks that the car is maroon, but because it's dark outside, it's really a red car. So once when the lights come on and they shoot, he turns around and he goes, "What the fuck is this, Rudy?" Yeah.
And then Jim's character's like, "Oh my god, that's not maroon. That's red."
Yeah, I know. He goes, "Nice red car, right?" He goes, "Yeah, maroon."
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. And there's a little backstory. Is that guy the guy who was shooting the commercial? He is extremely, and Kurt Russell's coworker is extremely superstitious about like everything. He's constantly petting a rabbit's foot. He has this weird thing with the color red. He won't walk underneath ladders, and you know, it's just it's really he's a goofball too. I mean, this film was filled with so many goofballs and so much fun that I really had to watch it twice. And I was telling Chris off air before the recording, I'm like, this reminds me of a lot of like the old 1963 classic, It's a Mad, Mad World.
Yeah, yeah.
And just because it's so zany, especially the last, I don't know, what, 20 minutes, where they're trying to get the 250 cars, you know, or whatever it is from Manuel's, you know, place to the car lot, because was it, there was some sort of thing where, oh, they looped the tape or something like that.
Yeah, the basically, not to give it all away, but basically the car lot that Russell's character is working for is inherited by his boss's daughter. And she kicks Russell out because, and she tries doing a commercial for it. And the competitor decides to take the tape and loop it over saying that she has a mile of cars for sale. But that's misleading. And you can be, you know, taken to court over that because you have to prove that you have a mile of cars. So right. Russell's character realizes he can save that by taking those 250 cars that Manuel has and put them on the lot, and it would be a mile of cars.
Yeah.
And don't forget Al Lewis as the judge, the hanging judge.
Yeah, Grandpa Munster.
I loved him. His reactions were great. And did you like those little miniatures he had of, like, the guillotine and and the guy that gets hung, because when he turns to Deborah Harmon character while she's on the stand, because she, Kurt basically has her lie and say, "Yes, I have a mile of cars," and he's like sitting there chewing tobacco, going, you know, saying, "Are you certain you know what you are talking about?" And he pulls that little miniature out of the guy that gets hanged right in front of him.
Right.
It's so crazy. I love it.
I love it when Kurt Russell's character and everybody's getting the cars, and he's got like the high school students helping him, and but the judge is like leaving the car. I was like, man, he's like, look at the clock. I'm like, what was I thinking? I could have been playing golf right now.
Yeah, and then later on, he's in the car, and he goes, "Hey, let's step on it. Maybe I can get in a couple of rounds.
Maybe I can get in eight holes." Yeah. And then he gets out of the car. He's like, "Yeah, that looks." And he kind of eyeballs it, like, "Yeah, that looks like a mile of cars to me."
Yeah, yeah. And then they're like, "Measure him."
You know, let's measure him. Like, oh Christ.
but yeah, it's a great little movie. It's
a great movie.
It's amazing how, like I said, it's amazing how that movie just came and went, and it didn't really do anything at the box office. And then obviously now it's gotten a life of its own on home video and television. So I mean, I have the special edition Blu-ray from Twilight Time that put it out, and it's got the commentary with Kurt Russell and Robert Zemeckis, and I love what they said at the end of the movie. They said, "It's amazing how this movie has endured because it's quite the scrappy little movie." But yeah.
Yeah, there's just so much fun stuff. And then, I mean, obviously, you know, if you've listened to the show before, I've referenced Dukes Hazzard a few times, and there's a great jump where they jump over a moving train with this blue car, and it was fantastic.
And it cuts to the shot of the dog in the back seat laying with its hands over its ears, like, "No, don't crash."
Yeah, I thought that was really funny. And there's also stuff where they're you know, Manuel is using water based paints to like paint over the cars.
I know.
And there's the whole little thing where the last thing I'll mention about this is that they're painting the car blue, but if you put a little bit of water on it, it starts to turn yellow, and it was an old yellow taxi cab.
That's yellow primer. It's one of those movies that, like, it you know, in real life they obviously can't do that, but somehow it manages to work in the movie. You know.
It's one of those 1980s feel-good rah-rah, you know, let's stick it to the man.
Well, before its time, it was also extremely tasteless. Like I said in my review of it, now it seems so quaint, you know. You kind of wish they would make something like that now.
Honestly, it's all about it's a product of its time.
Yeah.
We've said that before. I mean, we've talked about that before. Product of its time. Like, for instance, I just started rewatching Three's Company.
Yeah.
You know, the old TV show. Love that show. That show wouldn't be a big deal today at all.
Oh, it wouldn't It wouldn't be. Yeah. It wouldn't be a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, but again, I love this. I love the old Three's Company TV show. I bought the entire series on DVD when I found it. So yeah, I watch it. I'm like, it's really funny. But you got to think back to the early 70s when this show first came on, and they were really uptight about, you know, men and women living together and not being married.
Yeah, and also I believe the character that John Ritter was playing was pretending to be gay.
Yeah, exactly. And for Mr. Furley,
to constantly fool the renters that he's a gay guy living with these women, you know. Well, and also don't forget that was also back in the day when there was no, you know, there was no internet, there was no cell phones, there was no Twitter, there was no Instagram, there was none of these things. It was no podcasts. Yeah, it was basically regular terrestrial radio. And the reason why I mention that is because, you know, it's understandable why that show was a big deal this day. If you did it now, like we said, even with all the stuff that's available now, it wouldn't be the big hit that it was at its time, because everybody would pretty much see. And of course, because that show has been, in a way, it's been kind of sort of done before in terms of the aspects of the sitcom, you know, it really wouldn't be a big barn burner today. So yeah, that's what I was saying about how, it's how different it was back then in terms of, you know, where you got your entertainment from. Now, because you've got all this other stuff you can get entertainment from, it really wouldn't be a big hit. So,
Back in the 70s and 80s, and up until basically when cable and HBO started taking over, I mean, you only had like maybe 6-7 channels on television. You had like NBC, ABC, not even maybe even Fox for a little bit.
Yeah, and there was more local television than there was big network television. Now there's more big network television than there's very, very, very few local television anymore. So, I mean, that just shows you how different that is now.
Being a TV star back in the 70s and 80s was a big deal because you only had so many hours of program every week, and there's only like maybe 6 stations.
and the
big three, ABC, NBC, and CBS.
And that was back then when you could, when you had, you know, drive-in movie theaters and you had, like, independent theaters, and if you made some movie for $10,000 and if it had distribution potential, you could easily get your film advertised as a TV with a TV spot and everything, because advertisement back then wasn't as expensive as it was now. I remember an interview with Ray Dennis Steckler where he was talking about one of his movies, you know, back in the 60s. He said at one point, you know, he said he had $10 and he could probably get like maybe a day or two of, you know, radio spots for radio. He said, but back then $10 was $10, you know, but still, he said, if we had $25 or $20, you know, boy, you were in seventh heaven, because you could advertise your radio spot for an entire week as opposed to a day or two with $10, you know. Today, you couldn't get an advertisement for that. You couldn't get a radio spot for your little movie because, one, you know, it's not $20 anymore. It's a lot of money, you know. And second off, it's a hell of a lot of money. And second off, you got to get theaters that would be willing to play your product depending on what it is and if it's got distribution potential. So like we said, that's how different that was then in terms of like television and all that stuff. So, but yeah, right, used cars. It was a film of its time, you know.
Yes. So let's steer this right back onto the street.
Yep. Yeah. We always do that, folks. Derailed. Yeah. Sorry. Hey, we just love talking about these things. So.
Yeah, so, all right. Well, I think it's time to get into the main event. Oh, by the way, I did give used cars a big, big, massive thumbs up. I'm going to have to look for it on Blu-ray. Well, let's get into the main event. The Canadian bacon horror flick, Camp Death 3 in 2D from 2018. Now, a little background information on how this episode came about. Back in September of 2018, we were contacted through our official email address at thathorrorshowpodcast@gmail.com about viewing and reviewing this film for an upcoming THSP episode. Well, it turns out we were able to fit this into our recording lineup, and just in time, apparently. Camp Death 3 in 2D will be dropping on Amazon Prime in February, according to a January 3rd press release. But more on that in a few moments. Let's first take our final Speakeasy Podcast Network commercial break, and then we will roll that trailer for Camp Death 3 in 2D, and then we will get into the press release, and then Chris Canning will read his fantastic synopsis. We will then discuss the film. And finally, we will tell you what to do if you happen to be an indie horror film director, comic book creator, graphic novel creator, musical composer, or short story writer, or just more simply put, an artist that dabbles or is immersed in the horror genre, and you would like for us to review your work on an upcoming episode. We will be right back after these messages and the trailer.
Hey guys, what are you doing?
Sit down, man. Crack a beer. I'm just telling Feeler about how Vlad the Impaler used to shove steaks up donkeys' asses.
Dude, this dude is so fucking gross, but it's so fucking awesome.
It sure is, buddy.
If you want to learn about everything from Vlad the Impaler to anime to rap feuds, join us here at the Junk Drawer Podcast.
That's right. Crack a beer, learn a little, and we'll talk about
our junk!
Yeah, we're going to do that.
You can find us at thedrunkdrawerpod.podbean.com and at thespeakeasypodcastnetwork.tumblr.com. Also, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Junk Drawer.
Weekends are a good time to journey to Camp Crystal Meth. Unless the weekend begins with Friday, the 13th. Because 13 is an unlucky number. Especially when that's the number of voices in your head. Luck has run out for these 10 mental outpatients. As they've been prescribed 2 heaping spoonfuls of death. Because these are Johann's Woods. And he'll run you right out of them. Camp Death 3 in 2D. The legend of Johann continues. They will be chased. They will be stalked. They will be terrorized. They will be cauterized. They will be toasterized. And now, thanks to 2D technology, they will hear Johann's rage. Camp Death 3 in 2D. This is the face of terror. That is the face of terror. Face of terror. Terror face. Terror face. Face terror. Terror face. Face face. And this is the face of a man with a squirrel attached to it. Camp Death 3 in 2D. This film is about as subtle as a rock to the face. Camp Death 3 in 2D. In fact, if you have yet to channel, avoid this film at all costs. Camp Death 3 in 2D. But in all seriousness, though, if you haven't chuckled, don't watch it. It will upset you.
Okay, Chris, we're back. I've got the press release right here in front of me, and it says, for immediate release. Now, this is kind of funny. Director sits through own dumb movie for over 52 hours. Moronic PR stunt was aimed to promote imminent release of Camp Death 3 in 2D. Vancouver, British Columbia, January 3rd, 2019. For the purposes of promotion and raising much-needed advertising funds, Canadian director Matt Frame sat through his film for a grand total of 52 hours, 27 minutes, and 23 seconds. In the end, Frame raised 120% of the campaign goal of $1,000.
Mm.
The event was streamed live via Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube, and began at 8 p.m. on Saturday, December 29th, 2018, and finished 12:30 a.m. Tuesday, January 1st, 2019. Frame provided running commentary throughout the 52 hours plus, and was oftentimes joined by cast and crew of the Camp Death Day 3 and 2D, who offered insight and stories from the production. This is a quote from him. "It wasn't too bad, to be honest," Frame said. "I think the first 12 hours were the worst. Those were the hours in which you really begin to question your life choices." I really love that.
Well, he managed to stick through it, though. So, yeah.
Camp Death Day 3 in 2D is a horror comedy parody of Friday the 13th, Part 3, 3D, that has enjoyed a successful festival run ever since September, racking up 14 acceptances and 4 awards and several nominations. In February 2019, the film is being released digitally via Amazon Prime, hence the underlying purpose for Frame's admittedly moronic promotional stunt. "Believe me, I comprehended how idiotic and self-indulgent this appeared," declared Frame. "But if I concerned myself with the opinion of strangers, then I wouldn't have raised the money to make the film in the first place." Frame is referencing his 2014 world record coconut walk, in which he chained a coconut to his waist and walked around the local high school track for 24 hours nonstop, covering a leg-cramping 109 kilometers. That's 67 miles, folks. The walk, while humiliating, netted nearly $15,000 and helped finance the filming of Camp Death 3 in 2D. In September of 2014, asked about the slight air of desperation that tinged his event, Frame replied, "Oh, that's not a slight air. That's a thick fog." However,
well, hey, however, man, he's just trying to get his movie out there, hey, folks. That's just, you know,
that is commitment.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Real fast, real quick. This is what we were talking about earlier. You know, this is how difficult it is for someone to get their own, you know, small budget movie out there to the public. So, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, folks. That's just how difficult it is. So.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And then finally it says, "However, I need to do all I could do to ensure my golden years are spent eating pudding and yelling at pigeons and not ruling the day I couldn't be bothered to promote my own movie." So, Matt, golf clap and a tip of the hat for someone who's ran three marathons, Chicago marathons in 4 years. That is a awesome display of intestinal fortitude, my friend.
Yeah.
67 miles. God, that's rough. Okay, Chris, now on with the show. You're up, buddy boy.
Yeah, so, well, before I begin, so let me just kind of do a little bit of a preface here. Basically, writing a synopsis for this movie, believe it or not, was a somewhat difficult task. Now, I'm going to just say real quick, I did not hate this movie. I thought it was all right. I thought it was, you know, I mean, I understood what the filmmakers were trying to do. I would say this movie, in comparison to is a step above compared to another horror comedy that we had reviewed for our Thanksgiving episode. I will not say the title unless you, it involved a killer turkey. And it actually had a sequel that skipped its other sequel. But, and if you have listened to our show, you know what we're talking about. So, in my opinion, Camp Death 3 in 2D is better than that one, okay? But to really kind of get the plot line down, this film plays like it really didn't have a plot going for it. So, pardon my, as Dave Rodriguez would say, my pre-rhetoric, you know, synopsis. So, I'm going to do my best here to sort of lay the grounds here as to what this movie is all about, and obviously we'll be talking about it afterwards. So, so here I go. Camp Death 3 in 2D from 2018. Directed by Matt Frame. So, Camp Death 3 in 2D begins with a rather bizarre opening sequence taking place at Camp Crystal Meth on July 1979, Friday the 13th. Yes, folks, those are the jokes that are part of the movie. So, Alice Wainwright is trying to escape the evil clutches of the masked killer Johan Van Damme. Alice manages to thwart the killer's advances by, hiding behind a tree stump and placing a Sesame Street-like hand puppet on her hand and trying to offer Johan some fudge to calm him down. Once the killer takes a breather, Alice proceeds to kill Johan by whacking him over on the head over and over and over again with said Sesame Street-like puppet, which leads us to the opening credits sequence featuring newspaper headlines revealing news like Alice has been institutionalized in a mental hospital, the body of Johan Van Damme not being recovered, the puppet being placed in jail, and I also believe at one point the Alice Wainwright character has escaped from the mental institution, as well as the puppet, I believe, has escaped jail. Anyways, as the years have passed on, Camp Crystal Meth is reopened again by its owner, Mel Boogjumper, with the assistance of his nephew, Todd Boogjumper, Todd's girlfriend, Rachel, wheelchair-bound Barry, and groundskeeper, Crapsy.
Quackweed!
I know, we'll get to that soon. This is very difficult, folks. It's like trying to get the narrative down. It's all over the place. But anyways... But this time, instead of being a summer camp for horny teens, it is now a summer camp for the mentally ill. So, despite the good intentions by Todd, the history surrounding what happened at the camp years ago and the killer Johan Van Damme still permeates. And, well, wouldn't you know it, Johan is back with a vengeance and starts knocking off the new camp's rejects one by one, resulting in some of the most hysterically off-the-wall death sequences ever committed in a modern horror spoof. Yes, folks, that is my synopsis. I apologize that it has not been, as I would say, somewhat in-depth like my other synopsises, but writing a synopsis for this movie was very, very difficult. It was a test of the wills.
So a little bit about the background of just the synopsis part. Chris emailed me, you want to write the synopsis, should I? I'm like, you know, could you do it? Because I'm running around, I'm doing a million things.
Yeah, yeah. And I hadn't seen the movie yet, so it wasn't like I was asking him to do it, you know, because...
At this point, we should preface it. At this point, neither of us has seen the movie. I had just reached out to, you know, to get the stuff to watch the movie. And... I'm like, okay, Chris. I'm like, oh man. Chris is gonna hate me because I wouldn't even know how to begin to write a synopsis on this. I mean, there is just so much. There's so much dense stuff. How much stuff do you include? What do you exclude? You know, I'm like, there's a lot of things that go into writing a synopsis. You know, how in depth do you want to be?
I know. And it's all, and the movie is based, and not saying this in a negative way, but it. Per se, but the movie is all over the place, so trying to, like, you know, narrow it down in a synopsis is, like, you know, very, because I could have easily have written the synopsis by saying, you know, just saying a horror parody where a lot of things happen and the story is very marginal and that's about it, but, you know, I have to make it sound like it's enticing. Well, I mean, basically to make it sound like there's something going on here, so it was very difficult because I was watching it, and when I was done watching it, I understood what I saw, but when I was trying to, like, put it down on, you know, on paper, I'm like, well, okay, how do I narrow this down? It's like, because it's all over the place.
Yes, I mean, it's such a dense material, and there's, like, so many, and there's a lot of jokes, guys, a lot of jokes, and I think you watched it twice, right, Chris?
Yeah, I did. I had to watch it twice too. So
yeah, I watched it twice as well, and I'm like, the first time around, I'm like, okay, and then the second time, I'm like, I missed that joke. There's a Shelley character, which is a reference to obviously Friday the 13th Part 3, but then there's like the newspaper sequences, and I was remembering back in the opening sequence with the newspaper going through, and like, dude, this reminds me of so much of My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah,
with the newspaper, and what I love how they and they're showing, you know, the little tidbits about the, you know, the, like, the jail, breaking out of jail, being arrested, you know, missing people, whatever, and then all of a sudden they cut down to Todd Boogjump, Todd. Was it Boogjumper?
Todd Boogjumper. Boogjumper.
Yeah. So then you hear the voiceover guy go, "Well, Todd is kind of an idiot."
Yeah.
I thought that was freaking hysterical. And then you cut up a close up of him walking out of the Todd walking out of the cabin in the woods, and he's got this like plastic cup. He drops it, makes a breaking sound, and then he walks away.
Well,
the cup is on the ground. I'm like,
I know, and so I mean, this movie is basically like I think what you said before we started it's throwing everything in, including the kitchen sink. It's throwing in every joke that they can that can be mustered to keep the movie moving. And yeah. Actually, I will say this: when it opened with the beginning shot taking place on July 1979, Friday the 13th, as the credits said, at the camp, you know, it's in black and white, and there's like a high wind blowing, and the killer is chasing after the Alice Wainwright character, and the killer is basically like, you know, going, you know, like he can't talk or anything, and,
right.
And he's wearing like a mask that looks like it would be perfect for Phantom of the Opera or whatever it is. So anyways, and then she hides behind that tree stump, and when she pulls out that Sesame Street puppet and starts talking that way, I'm sitting here going, because I knew it was a comedy, but I was like, wait, what's going on? that threw me off. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And the fact that the puppet is like in color, but the background and everything is in black and white.
Yes.
So we'll do our best to decipher this whole movie. But basically we have that opening sequence, and then we get to the camp and we're introduced to Todd, the nephew, and we are introduced to its owner, Mel Boogjumper, who I have to say I thought was the funniest character of this whole movie. Just the way how he acted.
Oh yeah, he was certainly a character, all right.
Oh yeah, he just keeps yelling, and there's a moment in the movie where he says, "I hope this idea of yours works, because you know it didn't work, because you know for God's sakes I opened up the camp, you know, as a Jewish camp, and I put Mabat Shmoetz on the damn." I was like sitting here going, "What's going on?" Right. And I was just laughing. I could not stop laughing at his character. It was ridiculous.
Well, that and then he's got the binoculars, and he goes, "What are you doing? You bird watching, Uncle Mel?" He's like, "No, I'm watching Barry." That's the last time I hired somebody through the mail.
Yeah, yeah,
camp counselor.
Yeah, yeah, and Barry is in this wheelchair, and when he's looking through the binoculars, Barry is like tipped over.
Around. Yeah,
and then later on, there's
I love Barry. I'm sorry, go on.
No, I love the bit where Mel just attacks Barry while he's laying on the ground.
Yeah,
he just starts kicking him.
But the funniest part for me was when they introduced Rachel, and she comes back and she just knocks him in the head with the suitcase and just keeps walking.
I know. Oh wait,
doesn't even faze her, and then.
And then what I love also too is when Mel was kicking Barry, he walks away, and I literally said to myself, "Man, it would have been even funnier if he went back and kicked him again." And then all of a sudden, he goes back and kicks him again.
Yeah, or the fact when you know he's finally back in the wheelchair and handicapped adults or mentally ill patients come into the camp and they're putting on the bags, and she's like, and then Rachel talks to Barry, she's like, "Are you sure you got this?" She's piling the damn suitcases and duffel bags on top of them with the wheelchair. He's like, "I got this, Rachel, it's okay." And all of a sudden you see a cut shot of just a cabin. You see Barry rolling by and can't stop with all the bags, and Rachel chasing after him like almost like in a cartoon style.
Oh yeah, like, yeah. And then I love the introduction of their groundskeeper, Crapsy.
Oh, where that is. I love that. It's like, whackweed, just, you fucking idiot, that's a tree, whackweed.
Yeah, that's all he says. Crapsy just says, whackweed, and he's using a weed whacker that's, like, not even working, and he's trying to cut a tree down, and Mel gets angry at him and starts yelling at him. I literally was on the floor, I could not stop. It was just so ridiculous, and that's another thing to do about this movie I'll give it credit for. It is... This is one of those comedies or spoofs that basically the filmmakers pretty much said, you know, fuck political correctness. We're just going to go for broke for whatever gets a laugh, you know? So, So we get Todd, the well-intentioned camp counselor, and his girlfriend Rachel. And there's a moment in the movie where Rachel says, "You know, what is it?" He said that she claims that she had gotten her face hacked off of a weed whacker, and they had managed to put it back.
It was an outboard motor.
Outboard motor, yes.
She got her hair tangled and her face tangled in an outboard motor of a motorboat or something like that.
Yeah.
and how it was so well attached back that there was no scars.
Yeah. And of course, you know, they're obviously supposed to be the love interests and everything. So, yeah. And then we're introduced to all the various members of the mentally ill people that are going to be at the camp. And I got to be honest, I can't really go through their names because sometimes we never even get to know what their names are right away. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. There is, I think one of my favorite characters would have to be, it was between two. It was like the big guy that just starts, you know, randomly, you know, punching people and doesn't really speak. And then until he has his own like song and dance number.
Yeah. That's right. And then the other character was...
It was with the neck brace. it was licking the window.
Yeah, the girl with the neck brace. And she said that she was born without a neck, so that's why she's got to wear the brace. So
she was born prematurely, and she had some sort of neck problems or whatever. Whatever.
And then there's some Australian girl who's actually pretty cute in this, and we have to assume that she suffers from nymphomaniac kind of thing because she's like very excitable about towards anything involving sex or whatever.
Even with a toothbrush, you know, good dental health is good mental health.
Yeah. And then, he said, "Oh, I would have loved to have visited." She said,
"Down
she's
under."
From down under. Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious.
And then there's this chick with a Boston accent who's like constantly like fighting with people and
she's like, "Don't fuck me, I won't fuck with you." You know, hey, you know, Bronx like stuff, the accent, yeah,
right. And then of course, you know, the Rachel character has apparently bad memories of this camp, but we never really know why yet until later on. And there's a scene that happens later on in the movie where there's a puppet squirrel.
Yes.
Let's set this up. So Rachel goes off into the woods and she's crying, and then all of a sudden this hand comes up right behind her and it scares her. And then Todd comes in, and then there's this crazy old lady that constantly keeps telling them over and over that you're doomed. And
Crazy Ethel.
Ethel, yeah. And Uncle Mel shows up and he's eating something and he spits it right out in Todd's face. It's a banana, yeah. Right in Todd's face. And he goes, "Oh, that's just Crazy Ethel." And you know, she's just crazy. Don't mind her. And then she's got this pet squirrel that's obviously a puppet. And she takes it for no reason and throws it towards them. And it goes flying past Todd and Rachel. And it hits Mel and starts biting him in the face. He starts wrestling this puppet squirrel.
You know,
and I know they were parodying Caddyshack, but but I didn't realize Caddyshack was a horror movie.
Okay, so honestly, when I was watching this film, and not to get too off track, but I was like, it reminded me of the late '90s. Mark and I were we had just met at College of DuPage, and we bonded over our love of horror movies. And at that time, Scream was very popular.
Yeah.
So Mark was doing a shot for shot remake of Scream, at least the opening sequence of Scream, but it was a horror parody again. And we instead of Scream, it was called Squeak. And it was about this killer mouse.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't it originally called – because Mark told me about it. He actually showed me some of it, too. It was pretty funny. And it was about he I think at the time, though, he said it was called The Mouse Murders, or it was originally called Squeak, and then, you know.
I'm not too sure, but I remember us filming a few scenes, and he still probably has on High 8 or Super VHS or whatever it is.
Wow, that's going back.
But watching this reminded me of the fun that I had. But, yeah, getting back, I watched that. I'm like, man, that – I just started reminiscing in my head, and I had to pause the movie and then go back to it. But yeah, continue on.
So then there's this weirdo. There's this weirdo subplot where like he has to, Mel has to kill this puppet squirrel for no reason.
Yes.
Like, at one point he chases it with a shotgun, and it wouldn't fire.
So he throws it at it?
Yeah, he throws it, hits it, and he thinks he killed it, and it attacks him again. Right. This movie's all over the place. It really is. So that's why what I'm saying, like, we're trying our best to give you a somewhat of a scene-by-scene play, but it's very difficult because... It's all over the place.
Yeah, we're just hitting the highlights that really made us laugh.
Yeah, we're freestyling this basically.
Yeah.
So
obviously Crazy Ethel is has a nod to Crazy Ralph from the original Friday the 13th. You know, well, you're all doomed.
Yeah.
We were talking about this too again off air. I mean, we had such a great conversation, and now we're just recording it for you guys. But the death where.
It's spelled Johan, but they say Johan Van Damme. So
Johan Van Damme starts attacking the Bronx character, the chick, and she's like, trick or treat on this, flapjack. Like, I just thought that was such a great thing. And then she breaks off the stick, and he starts firing a toast at her from the toaster.
Yeah. He's got a toaster that, first he pulls out a spatula, one of those sharp ones that they use for the grill, and she goes, a spatula, and he throws it at her, and it lands on the tree right next to her, like an axe. Then he pulls out a toaster, and then she
first it's there was something else in there because that's why she said trick or treat on this flapjack.
And then she
big then pancakes.
Then he pulls out a toaster, and all of a sudden she starts like going, no, not that, and he chases her out in the woods, and then he starts firing it at her, and it keeps hitting it, and she's like trying to hit him with a stick, and she goes, my God, how much toast can you get that thing? and then the killer takes the toaster and starts swinging it around by the cord, and then swings it at her, and the toaster
decapitates her.
The toaster decapitates her.
I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
With some really bad CGI gore effects, but done in a way that actually is like it's meant to be. You know, it wasn't like it was trying to be, you know, too upscale. You know,
I
love the bit where they now. There's a scene with Crapsy where they have him tied to a tree or chained to a tree.
and Todd has to explain why Crapsy's chained to a tree, because Crapsy has a tendency to go around pleasuring the small appliances and other things and equipment around the camp.
Yeah, and then later on he's still tied to the tree, and the killer takes the weed whacker, and all Crapsy can do is say with a smile, he goes, whack weed, and the killer decapitates his head.
Yes.
And then... And then of course Barry ends up getting killed. His death sequence is pretty funny. He's by the pool,
right.
And he's like, and we get the POV of the killer through the mask. So that's basically from Halloween, and Barry is like, oh hey, what are you doing here? Oh, are you dressing up like Johan Van Damme to, to scare us? Oh, okay, whatever. Well, I gotta go ahead and close up this pool here, and then all of a sudden, as soon as the killer lunges at him, he looks over, and he doesn't even have, like, a terrified reaction. It's just more like, hey, what are you doing? Hey, stop it there. And his Canadian accent actually comes out a little more during that shot. And then one of the characters, Rachel, jumps in the pool, and she sees him underwater in the wheelchair, but
with a book.
It's something involving aquatic fish or whatever it was.
A fancy aquarium fish or something like that.
I know. I was just laughing.
Okay, but now we're going to talk about one of my favorite scenes coming up, because there's two of my favorite scenes coming up, and I think it was you too. They got the cop out there, and he goes, this is your friend. He has a 50-50 chance of making it.
Oh yeah.
dead.
The cop has poor Barry's body sitting on the wheelchair, and then all of a sudden,
coroner's bag.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, there's like a moment where he starts telling everybody about how Mel was drunk one night and wanted to try to sue the lake because Mel claimed the trees told the lake to say something insulting to Mel, so Mel then starts splashing at the lake. And then there's a great bit where Mel says, that lawsuit is still pending, or whatever it was.
That's right.
And then real fast, we should probably mention, because I think this is very interesting, we have to mention this because this is actually, believe it or not, part of plot, okay,
right.
Is the whole aspect behind the killer, Johan Van Damme. which they did a parody of it in here because it's from The Burning, if you remember, where yes. they talk about Cropsey. So, yeah. so basically, if you remember, Tim, Johan Van Damme, his mother worked at the camp, and then she mm-hmm. was fired. But why was she fired, Tim?
Was it for a lazy eye?
Yeah, she had a lazy eye. And they show us in flashback the mother, and she was a real weird character, too. Like, yeah. But then they were so poor when she was fired that she had to feed Johan, when he was a kid, fudge using sap from a sycamore tree, which then somehow managed to turn him into a mongoloid, basically. So because she was upset at that, she started killing people at the camp. And then it was basically how'd it go? It was a woman by the name, a girl named by the name of Dawn Childress, that chopped the mom's head off.
I thought it was Alice because they made a reference to Friday the 13th, that being Alice. You know,
well, yeah.
The first one,
okay.
Part of the second one.
Yeah. No. Basically, the mother was killed. The mother was killing the people, and then she ended up being killed. By the survivor Dawn Childress.
Okay.
She chopped the mother's head off. And then years later, Johan returned to the camp to finish off the whole ritualistic killing of these people. And then that was when Alice Wainwright, stopped him, basically. So,
gotcha.
So that was a story. So I'm sorry, folks, we had to basically like set that up for you because to understand why there's a motivation behind the killings here. But the scene with the cop. Why don't you tell that one, Tim, where he's taking the cop?
So he's got Barry's body in this coroner's bag, and he's got him like tethered. It looks like a bungee cord or something, or some sort of rope on the back of his little motorcycle. Like it looks like a kiddie motorcycle, basically. He's driving down the road, talking about having stopping for some fish and chips. He goes, "It's the best fish and chips you'll ever have," whatever. But at one point. As they're going down this road, the wheelchair flips over. And he starts dragging the poor guy, the body. But then the thing starts to be lit on fire. and the cop is completely oblivious to the fact that the freaking Barry's on fire.
I know.
The bike's on fire.
And then once he stops the bike later on. The wheelchair is like covered in ashes and everything because
right.
he runs into the killer. And what happens then? What happened there? What was it? The cop walks up to him and says, "Oh, you're going to stab me or whatever."
Oh yeah, you're blocking my path. What are you doing? He goes, he pulls out a wrench. He goes, "What are you going to jerk me off with the wrench?" And he's like, "No, you gotta go for the liver. That's almost an instant kill." And he starts pretty much even kills himself. again. I mean, I was up until I'm like, what the? I don't know what that had to do with anything. But again, that's this kind of movie,
I'll bet you if you drifted off let's just say you were watching this and you drifted off asleep, and you woke up like let's say 15 minutes in, and you'd still wouldn't know what's going on. You'd still be going, what just happened?
I was fully awake two times, and I really had to really work hard to piece it together.
Yeah, oh my god! And then there's the scene where. They basically discover that people are missing in the camp, and Mel decides to shut the camp down. So
yeah.
Uncle Mel decides to grab his wife, who's like, I don't know what's wrong with his wife. His wife is like there's a scene where we see her. She just like comes stepping outside of the cabin, throws garbage outside, and just proceeds to flip Mel off, and mouth fuck you under her breath, and then go inside mm-hmm. the house. Like we don't even know what her problem is, but
yeah.
they try to escape in the van. And what was it? The killer? No, the killer was hiding in the back of the van.
Right.
And
right.
all of a sudden, Mel starts having an allergic reaction. And the reason why he's having an allergic reaction is because he's allergic to plungers
poop?
Plungers with shit on it. And then all of a sudden, the killer appears behind him with a plunger that's got like this huge piece of shit.
Right. And which is completely weird, right? I mean, obviously, expectations. Not expectations, but the bar has already been set.
I know, no,
high, high or low, whatever. But then they cut to his wife in the passenger seat, and she's laughing.
I know, while he's being attacked, and he's got the plunger on him, and at one point, this shit lands in his mouth.
Oh God, that was awful. Oh,
and then the killer starts going after her, and she gets out of the van, and then she tries
the
lowest
chasing ever.
Oh yeah, she tries to run, but she can't because she's wearing those goddamn high heels. You know, you ever? I've seen women try to walk with high heels. Okay, that can't master those. And they either fall over or they just slip. You know, take the high heels off and just run on your feet. God damn it. But
yeah,
she...
But the van's following her at like 1 mile an hour and she's like, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden she falls over and starts screaming and then the killer stops the van, gets out, and is walking up to her, and then all of a sudden Mel shows up again. Somehow he manages to survive the plunger death. And he grabs his wife by the head like he's about to embrace her, because thinking that, you know, their number's up. And then all of a sudden, right, he takes a mean look and then says, "Allow me," and then tears her head off.
I'm like, what did that? What is? What's going on?
I know. it's like the characters are like going through so many like emotions. Mel's angry, then he's sad, then he's vengeful, then he's like with a drop of a hat, it just happens, and then Mel ends up in the van, and he starts trying to chase. He runs over the killer, and then the killer starts attacking him through the hood.
Yes.
And then he thinks he's got him off, and then he notices the passenger door is like slightly open, and he's like kind of like, after he's laughing to death, he looks over and he stops laughing, and he's like and he's like trying to like close the door, and all of a sudden the killer breaks through the window.
Yeah.
And he's like trying
to get
up.
He starts kicking him in the face.
I know, yeah. He's saying, "Get off, get off, get off, get off." And then he gets the killer off.
Runs him over finally.
Well, we think he does. And then he starts driving, and then he sees that pesky puppet squirrel sitting behind these rocks.
And a log in the middle of the road.
I know, yeah. And then all of a sudden he's like, "Oh, I'm going to get you." And then all of a sudden he hits the rocks, and the car blows up.
probably the strangest explosion since you remember prom night.
Oh yeah,
over the cliff.
Yeah. Well, that was a pyrotechnic issue. But yeah. Still.
Like, what's going on?
This movie is 80 minutes, and that scene happens in 45 minutes, and we're still wondering what's supposed to happen. Oh, by the way, Tim mentioned something before we started. The way how this movie is shot, it looks like there are some scenes where the actors are sped up. You said you noticed that, Tim.
Yeah,
it's almost like a silent movie.
Like they sped up the film like for the running sequences, and they slowed it down. It seemed like part of it, and it was probably done intentionally, but just filmed like a cartoon. And honestly, it works here for that. I thought it was hilarious, especially when like ever you see Todd running or you see Rachel run away. You know, Archie was chasing after a Barry's character when he was going with the luggage. Just really kind of funny stuff. I was like hoping for like, you know, throwing a few like of those really cartoon sound effects. You know, like like Fred Flintstone's feet, you know, paddling or whatever. I just super funny. I was expecting more of a banana peel slip and fall kind of stuff. Like, but still funny stuff.
I don't know if they did that. That would have been pretty beneath them to do that in this movie. But and then and then we also get the big reveal with Rachel, because at one, you know, she finally reveals to Todd that her face was never disfigured by a motor. You know, what was it again? It was the propeller.
Yeah, outboard motor, I believe it said.
Outboard motor, yeah. She says, and I love how she says, "They never reattach my face. It's not possible to do that." but she tells what happened. What was it? She lived in a cabin near the camp, and there was some weird...
Yeah, she lived like across the stream, kind of like... almost like, again, like Friday the 13th. She was on the other side where the camp was, and she ran into Johan, and she was talking about... what was it? He kept offering her candy, and she didn't want it. She didn't want the fudge or whatever it is.
But then didn't she say like what he would do to her is he would take like a microphone and a speaker and rub it together.
The feedback.
And I'm sitting there going, what? The feedback.
Like, what does that even mean? I'm like, I guess she escaped his clutches with the feedback. Oh, and apparently the feedback went on for hours.
Yeah. And then at one point in the movie, they're having a Johan Van Damme party. What was it? They're all going to dress up as Johan Van Damme.
A costume party to commemorate 437 lost souls that lost their lives over the years at the Camp Crystal Meth.
Oh, wait, we forgot to mention one thing, too. You should mention the Star Wars reference in this movie.
Oh, yes. So there was, obviously, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. And so there's these two, I forget the characters' names. One was, I'm trying to remember her name.
Well, one was an Asian chick, and she had, like, personal problem issues. And then there was the other guy who was, like, playing pranks on them, dressing up as Johan Van Damme.
Yeah, her name was Angela Park, and the guy who played Van Damme, the guy who was, like, playing pranks. And I think that was Shelby Hammersmith. I think that's the name of the character. I believe so. Okay. So anyway, they're in the park, and they're in the woods, and they run across this thing. And they're like, ooh, look at that. That's like an anti-gravity bike, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, went in for this really long explanation, but basically because they couldn't say speeder bikes because probably, you know, of the Star Wars, you know, reference.
Yeah, Disney, yeah.
Star Wars, whatever. But very, very, a very heavy tip nod to Star Wars. So they had like the speeder bike chase or anti-gravity bike chase through the woods, high speed. Angela is shooting lasers at Johan, and then Johan pulls out a lightsaber and he starts swinging it, you know, a laser sword. So then he's like, Angela gives Shelby, I believe, the lightsaber, and he can't turn it on. So she's like, so Johan's like, you got to push the bottom. He's like, use your words, man.
I know, and he ends up turning it on, but he like doesn't he like accidentally turn it on with the lightsaber, like
pointed at her head and ends up like poking her eye out and, you know, killing her.
Yeah, and she falls off the thing, and then he tries looking inside of it, and it goes through his eye.
Then Johan is like, what?
Yeah, he's like, just
drives on.
He's flailing his arms like, what, like in that pose where you go, what is wrong with you? Come on, I'm trying to tell you something.
Yeah, so.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so between that, and then they cut back to the party, and then the people start dying at the party. Now, there's a lot of deaths we don't see.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
That just happened. That movie gone forever.
And at one point, the Australian chick tries to get it on with Todd, and then Rachel finds out, and then she runs off, and then she runs into the puppet squirrel who has like a bag of cocaine and starts like sniffing it like crazy, and then
blows on her until she dies.
Yeah. It just blows it right at her, like a giant windstorm of cocaine flies right at her. And again, sitting here going, "What is going on?"
Yeah, I'm like. Why are these squirrels out for blood?
I know, and how is this squirrel able? Granted, yes, wouldn't really ask how, but how is this squirrel sniffing cocaine and all of a sudden sneezing it at her to the extent where it like creates this dust storm of cocaine flying at her?
Gosh, yeah. So basically, Johan kills everybody at the party at the final goodbye party.
Yeah.
Except, I guess, Crazy Ethel and the guitarist. I don't know what happened to them.
Oh, wait. Another character that I really wished had more screen time was the crazy Irish guy.
Oh, yeah. The potato famine guy.
Yeah.
I ate a rock. I didn't shit well for a week.
Yeah. He finds, like, a suitcase full of potatoes, and he just starts going crazy. Oh, me potatoes. Sweet Mary and Joseph. And he starts telling the story about this potato famine.
And he ate a rock.
I know, yeah. And then all of a sudden, Johan Van Damme is there and lights him on fire, and he's still talking about it.
Like he's the guy from Forrest Gump, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of shrimp, it's potatoes.
Yeah, but he's like, oh, let me tell you about the potato famine. I was there. There were no potatoes.
I was digging the ground.
I had to mention that because I was like, what's going on? Again, just laughing, going, what's going on, man? So this movie should have been called What's Going On. Yeah. And in fact, I would have thought it would have been funnier because it's called Camp Death 3 in 2D, that whenever they have a scene that is supposed to think is a 3D sequence, they should have like a sign on the bottom saying, pop up saying, put 2D glasses on now.
Well, I love after that one kill. I think it was right after the Star Wars. They go right to intermission for like.
Yeah, yeah. It's not even a long intermission. It's a short one just to stop the madness.
That's what she said. but no, but I mean, honestly, I have, you know, I've watched Gone with the Wind a few times, and that's the only intermission I know during a movie, maybe The King and I, and then
Ten Commandments.
On a DVD, you have to flip it over.
Don't forget
to watch part two.
Don't forget Ten Commandments. Come on.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, so then we get to our big reveal where basically Todd is knocked out. Actually, he's trying to find Rachel because she's under attack by the killer. And then all of a sudden, this windstorm starts blowing out of nowhere. And he ends up getting knocked out. And then, he gets knocked out. I know. I'm trying to remember. He gets knocked out. Then he wakes up and he finds himself in a Santa Claus suit tied up. And
And that's obviously not to Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm fairly certain that's what they're going for there.
And then all of a sudden, there's two Johan Van Damme's standing right by him.
Ooh, the plot thickens.
I would say thins, but, know, whatever. But anyway.
And honestly, I think that's almost a harken back, if you want to think about it, to maybe possibly Scream 2 when they had two killers.
Yeah, yeah. And then all of a sudden we also find out that the head of Johan Van Damme's mother is alive and well. So obviously that's a nod to Reanimator. And then she's able to move around by wearing a mechanical,
almost like a Inspector Gadget, like flying hat.
A drone. Yeah, like some weird drone-like thing. And it turns out that Johan Van Damme survived, but the other Johan Van Damme is
drum roll.
Alice Wainwright, because she apparently escaped the prison. Remember?
Yeah, the mental institution. She was She escaped the mental institution. He broke her out. Van Damme's mom broke her out.
Yeah, and apparently she. And I love how she goes. Alice goes, "Hey, I just want to let you know I'm really sorry I killed all these people here.
Yes.
But she made me sign a contract, and I can't go off the
contract.
Yeah, and we actually see her pull the contract out.
Yeah, and it says killer contract, and she goes like, "Do you know how much it costs for a lawyer to go through this, reading something you had or signing something you haven't read?"
So then all of a sudden, and then at one point he faints, and then he wakes up again because they start throwing. Some of her moonshine on him or whatever it was, and
yes.
But so then they're gonna kill him, but he manages to escape being killed by taking the rope off, and it's great. He goes, "Wow, that wasn't even on tight."
because they picked up Rachel, and we were gonna throw her in the lake or kill her. And
yeah,
so
yeah. And then he takes one of these tiki torches and lights Johan Van Damme's mom on fire.
And so she's flying around burning.
I know, and then like the thing shorts out that's making her fly, and it catches on fire even more. And then the Alice then goes just completely crazy, and then starts going after him.
And I would assume, is she like under some sort of spell because her eyes turn red?
I know. Is she possessed? We shouldn't be asking questions about that. So what does he do to her? Because he ends up running away, and then he starts defending himself, and then what?
They have a fight on the bridge. He ends up hitting her with a tiki torch, I believe, and decapitating her.
Thought he kicked her head off at one point with his boot, and so he decapitates her. And then Johan, the real Johan Van Damme, starts chasing him around, and he ends up coming across a tent, and he opens up the tent, and he goes, "It's you!" And then we don't even see who it was yet until he goes inside, and then it turns out it's the Purple Sesame Street puppet that also escaped, that we sort of completely forgot about until now. And then he puts it on and he starts like talking like, you know, the puppet from earlier. God, trying to describe this is like a nightmare.
Yes, because honestly, you guys, we didn't say it before, but this is a spoiler. Obviously, we're spoiler heavy.
Yeah,
we're spoiler heavy podcast. But yes, it's really hard to talk about because there's just so much stuff.
So he starts chasing Johan around, and then Johan eventually decapitates the puppet, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. He decapitates the puppets, and then of course,
they make it to the beach or the river,
yeah.
And the river and the riverbank.
Yeah, and of course,
apparently it changed from night to day really quickly.
Yeah. So the killer gets on this little dinghy that happens to be out there, and then starts floating away out into the river. and Todd wakes up because apparently he just fainted rather than, you know, being, you know, attacked. So he sees Johan out in the water, and then all of a sudden, these hands tear through the dinghy, and then it pulls out a microphone and this little speaker and starts doing the reverberations.
And honestly, that shot where the hands are coming through the bottom of the boat,
yeah,
it looked almost like kind of like almost something like Friday the 13th, not Friday the 13th, but Nightmare on Elm Street when Freddy's hands were coming out of the water with the claw,
yeah,
for Nancy. So I mean, I kind of maybe think it's that, or maybe even a throwback to remember our Dick Moss episode. We were talking about Amsterdam.
Oh yeah,
and then the killer would be underneath the raft.
Yeah, and he takes the knife and cuts it open underneath exactly. It. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh. But continue on. Yeah. So now they're
So this all of a sudden it these hands pop out underneath the boat, and it pulls out a microphone and a little speaker and starts playing it. But and all of a sudden, Johan goes crazy. He whips off his mask, and all of a sudden he has this weird demonic face and everything.
But do you remember how they get up into the air? Does he like hit the boat? Or does he like deflate the boat?
And then I think all he deflates off in the sky something. Yeah, he deflates the boat, and the boat takes off in the sky.
Sorry, could you repeat that? I didn't hear that. What?
Oh no! I think he deflated the boat, and then all of a sudden it flies up in the air like a jet, and then. Yeah. And then Todd's watching, and he has this hysterical line where he goes, "How is that even possible?" And we're sitting here going, "How did anything in this movie happen that was possible?" So then Johan goes flying in the air. He starts going crazy, because of the reverberation of the microphone against the speaker, and his face starts bleeding and everything. And then he falls out of the boat, of the little dinghy, and lands, and his head, you know, plops open and everything. And then the boat starts coming crashing down, and it lands, and it turns out that the person that stuck their hands up underneath the boat was Rachel. So she saved the day.
Yes. And she comes out of the boat, and she walks up to Todd, and they embrace, and she's like, "Why are you wearing a Santa suit?" He goes, "I don't even know."
And then all is well in the world. Up until they happen to stumble across a little table with a present on it.
Yeah, she said, and this is a – I love this slide. She's like, "Oh, my God, you remembered. My birthday was only 67 days ago."
And then all of a sudden, you know, Todd goes, "Wait, no, don't open it." And she opens it, and all of a sudden the burnt head of Johan Van Damme's mom comes out. And then I love this. I wonder if it was a Creepshow reference because it cuts to Todd – moving in slow motion, a close-up of him going, "No!" And it's like got like a weird spinning wheel thing behind it. And the reason why I mentioned Creepshow is whenever there was a reaction shot during a horrifying sequence, it turned into a comic book reaction where the background changes color and everything. So I'm wondering if that's what they were trying to do here. But then, you know, that's the end. And, that's the end of Camp Death 3. Yeah, Fade to Black. That's the end of Camp Death 3 in 2D. You know, it's just... But, yeah, it's... I got to be honest. It wasn't a great movie, but it was serviceable. It was funny. I mean, some jokes kind of fell flat. But, you know, I mean, it served its purpose quite well, considering that it's a horror spoof that throws everything in there, including the kitchen sink and a couple of extra parts as well, you know. So
yeah, no, I but honestly, I think overall, I give it a thumbs up. I don't know how do you feel about it? Thumbs up, thumbs in the middle.
I'm gonna give it I'm gonna give it a thumbs in the middle. I mean, like I said, I didn't hate it. It wasn't great, but it was. I'm gonna give it a thumbs in the middle. It did what it was supposed to do. There were some times where I felt like it really needed to be a little more focused because it was just all over the place. But at the same time, you know, I found there were some things about it that were pretty funny, and so like I said, it's a thumbs in the middle with me, you know.
Yeah, I'll give it a thumbs up. I enjoyed it enough, but yeah, there is some really great taglines. I'm going to try to find them. Hold on one sec. Yeah, apparently the budget for this estimated was $35,000 Canadian, so that was interesting. Oh, these are some of my favorite taglines that they use. This is again from Internet Movie Database. It says, "Terror has two dimensions. sometimes terror can't be smelled. This movie is stupid." This movie is super stupid. the most horrible good movie ever.
I can't blame him though. That's like truth in advertising. Come on.
Yeah. And I will say, I really enjoyed the artwork for the poster, for the cover of the DVDs, and so I thought that was really cool. This film was also going by different names at different times: Camp Death 3 and 2D, Blood Sister, The Longest Chase. here we go. This was a working title, Blood Sister. This was another working title, The Longest Chase, and there's two more working titles: Camp Death 3, The Final Summer. I thought that would be pretty cool. So, yeah, Death Camp 3, The Final Summer, and then Camp Death 3, The Final Summer. So The Longest Chase was pretty funny, though. I thoroughly enjoyed that. It was officially released in Canada on September 21st of 2018. So, interesting. So I give it a thumbs up. You give it a thumbs in the middle. So I don't really have anything else to say. Do you have anything else you'd like to add, Chris?
No, man. I think we've exhausted our feelings on this movie.
I'd say so. Enjoyed it. Thank you, Matt, for letting us review your film. It was a blast. And as I previously mentioned before, if you're a horror artist and would like for us to possibly review your work for an upcoming episode, you can email us at thathorrorshowpodcast@gmail.com with the subject line submission. We'll be happy to check it out and get back to you. Chris, again, do you have anything else you'd like to add before we bow out tonight?
Well, before we go, all I have to say is, Matt Frame, if you ever happen to do a sequel, please bring back the Mel Boog jumper character, please. I'd like to see him have a bigger role in this in a sequel, if one ever materializes. I'm serious. I thought he was the funniest character in the whole movie.
Well, all right, him and his socks and sandals.
Yeah. So yes, Matt, if you're listening, please, if you do a sequel, please put Mel back and have him survive somehow. Like he survived the explosion. He decides to reopen the camp again. You know, not learning his lesson the first time. So
apparently, fourth time maybe the fourth maybe the charm.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. So yep, yeah, that's about it, man. That's all I got.
All right. So, guys, stay tuned to our social media for updates on our upcoming February episode. We should have something for you relatively quickly. For Chris Koenig, I'm Tim Kazza. Thanks for choosing to listen to THSP, and we'll see you all next month.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Hey guys, well that's the end of the episode. We hope you enjoyed listening to us as much as we did recording it. If you subscribe to us through iTunes, please leave us a note and a rating. Your feedback helps shape our show. If you would like to email us with questions, comments, or even a possible show idea, or just to say howdy, you can by emailing us at thathorrorshowpodcast@gmail.com. We are also on Facebook. Just type in That Horror Show Podcast in the search bar, and we'll pop right up. Make sure to also find and like the Speakeasy Podcast Network's official Facebook page as well. That way you can keep up to date with all the network's great podcasts. We are also on the Twitter machine at THSP at That Horror Show 1. So be sure to stalk us there. Follow us there, and we'll follow you right back. Finally, I'm on Instagram at Tim at That Horror Show Podcast. So we'll see you around, and take care.
Thank you for listening to THSP Season 5. Good night.